Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 147, I chat with AVS Forum founder David Bott about his home theater and where he sees the industry going. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded February 4th, 2013. Episode 147, Home Theater Community Activism. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week, my guest geek is David Bott, the founder of AVS Forum, the largest online home theater community on the web. And so we're going to be geeking out on home theater. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me. Welcome. It's always a good thing to be welcomed to a show like this. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, those of you who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or chat logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for David, and I'll pass along as many as I can as we go along. Now, David, I want to start out by taking a look around your home theater, which is really nice. I want to give people a sense of what you, the founder of AVS, actually have in the way of a home theater yourself. And so you've agreed graciously to give us a tour. So let's take a look.
Well, this will be interesting, first of all. So this will be a first. I have to pick up the notebook to move it around. And I'm also going to change the audio because we're going to have to use the audio on the MacBook, just a heads up.
Sure.
So real quick here, this is a dedicated room. We run a dedicated theater here, 10-foot wide screen. It is a 7.2 audio system with 9 speakers. There's 2 on each side, one by each row of seats, if you will.
And then, oh, the surrounds, you mean? The surround, there are,
yeah, the surround there are channels are one on each row of seats, and then there's the full pair on the back for stereo rears. The speakers are all by Triad, and they're all Triad in-wall platinums. And basically, I'll give you a real quick tour if you'd like.
You bet. The Triad platinums are wonderful speakers, by the way. I've heard them, you know, in various trade show settings and so on, and they're always some of the best-sounding speakers at, you know, Cedia.
Well, I'm going to see if this works out, guys. I'm going to try to watch what I'm doing here at the same time, and I hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, what we got here is we got a SMX screen running at 10-foot wide in CinemaScope. And
so it's a 235 screen.
That is right. It's a fixed aspect screen, 235. We'll auto-adjust, bringing in black curtains on the left and the right. And it is an acoustically transparent screen, so therefore, obviously, the speakers are behind it. Also up in front, you can't see them because it's too dark up there. There are 2 Velodyne subwoofers, one in each corner to offset for the subchannels. And if I roll around here, this is a little awkward because I'm trying to watch the screen and we have a slight delay, obviously. Here's the main seating position. And there's 2 rows of 4 seats.
And very nice. Who made the chairs?
Those are from the chairs are Jay Miller of built those chairs, and why am I drawing a blank on the company name? I don't know. I do apologize, but Jay Miller built those. I'm not going to say. Oh, geez, he's going to shoot me, and I'm sorry, Jay. I'm so sorry, man. You know I love you.
It's all right.
And so, anyways, we're going to move back here. And you'll see all the walls are treated and what have you. And then back here, we have a hidden door, which brings us into the projection room.
Man, you've got a whole separate room behind the theater with all your gear. So certainly you don't have all the blinking lights in the theater. And also the heat. I assume that this room is treated, air-conditioned, so that things don't get too hot.
Yep, we have, it's back here because of sound. That projector is a Runco VX2 DC with an anamorphic lens, an ISCO lens. And then the amplification is by Lingdorf. There's five amplifiers there. And then we come down and we have, I hope this is working out. There we go. We have a Anthem D2V processor, an APC power backup system. Of course, we run OPPO for Blu-ray, Toshiba HD DVD. Yes, don't fault me for that. I still have an HD DVD player.
You still have an HD DVD player?
Dude, because I got a ton of movies on, you know, people were just getting rid of them, so I was buying them because a movie's a movie.
Yeah, and true enough.
The quality's still great. You know, it's outstanding. Come on. And then we got a dedicated media center PC there that runs some other things in the room and in the house or what have you.
So do you have stuff loaded onto that media center PC that you can stream out from there?
Yeah, my main server. I'm going to go ahead and reset up over here, guys.
Okay.
So if you want to get me off the air, it'll be probably easier on the eyes. The main in the other room, there's a whole other rack system that runs the house, and that rack system, is a 17 terabyte server for content. And
17 terabytes.
Yeah.
How much of that do you have filled up? Is my question.
Probably 15. And basically what it is there is it's, you know, all DVR recordings and things like that. So,
oh, right.
Yeah. So, because we like a lot of series shows and what have you. Oh, by the way, I was right. It was Acoustical Innovations. I have to give another shout out to Jay Miller for the chairs. So
yes,
sorry about
thanks.
That.
Thanks to F and Dunn in the chat room for bringing that up. Acoustic
yes,
Innovations by Jay Miller.
Yes,
exactly.
The
right.
Chairs are great. They're motorized. They did a wonderful job fitting them for this room. They were custom made. I was the first one to get these sets, and they were made for this room. And I do thank them. But sorry, enough about that. The okay. Any case.
Well, now Dr. T has a question. We were talking a minute ago about media center PCs, home theater PCs, and so on. And Dr. T in the chat room says, any suggestions on a capture card to my computer to record four shows at a time over the air? No cable card required. Do you have any thoughts on that?
In my house, I personally run four HD home runs. Basically, each one of those HD home runs has two tuners. They can be either cable QAM tuners or over-the-air tuners. And I run four of those. So basically, that gives me eight possible recording sessions. Depending on the platform you're running, you are limited by the platform of how many streams it will allow you to record at one time. So if you're running a media center PC or some other software, it's all going to be limited on the number of streams and the power of your computer, quite literally. Mm-hmm. But the HD Home Run is a great product.
And you have all those in one computer?
No, HD Home Runs are separate boxes.
Oh, separate boxes. My mistake. Yeah.
Basically, what happens is the signal comes into that, and the HD Home Run takes that signal and turns it into IP, and that streams to the computer over your network. And on the other end, your computer sees that as a tuner card.
Got it. So, Dr. T, there's one good way to do it. How much are those home runs? Are they expensive?
No, you can buy them. You can buy them used, or you can get them, new. They have the newer versions. I have the older ones. I haven't really priced them out in a while because I've been running them for years. I mean, they just work.
Cool.
You also have other options these days, like, you know, DirecTV and Dish Network, which allows you to record multiple shows at one time. Obviously, they're going to be fixed on the DVR at that point, but they're also great for streaming around the house because you can pull, like the Dish, for example, and use the Hopper system. You can record six different programs and then stream those to any of the Hopper Joey systems or little boxes that basically just go around, you know, anywhere in your house, if you will, and you can stream back from those.
Right. Those are the thin clients to the Hopper, which is the sort of mothership, if you will.
That's correct.
But those, of course, are tied to the Dish Network the Hopper is Dish Network. DirecTV also has, you know, the capability of whole home DVR and multiple recordings at once. But those are tied to the satellite service. And Dr. T, I know, was talking about over the air. So the home runs would work for that. There are a number of other options. I can't think of any at the top of my head, but certainly someone in the chat room will, no doubt. 130 a pop, Eldrick says, for the home runs. So that's not
too
bad.
There you go. And also, you can also, there's, we have great people up on AVS Forum, like Assassin PC. Those guys are awesome. They'd be able to help you out, answer some of those questions. So make sure, if you haven't checked the Home Theater PC section of the site, look for the Assassin guys. They're there to help. They give great support over our site. I understand they do sell a product also, but they do offer support to our members, which is wonderful.
Right. Now, Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, you're using Velodyne subwoofers. What size are they, and what's the reasoning behind using two instead of one?
Well, that's a good question. It's the size of the room is understanding, first off, is 27 by 14. So there's a lot of cubic foot of space in here. It is acoustically treated. The Velodynes that I run are quite literally, they're very old. They're Velodyne Digital Drive 15s. And I say they're old, but they are tried, proven subwoofers. These are DSP-driven subs. They were made quite a while ago. I think they're probably about 9 to 10 years old, I think, the series I have. And I run two just because when I pinged out the room originally, we ran microphone in 7 to 8 different positions in the room, and we found that we had some standing waves, and we were trying to cancel out some of those waves. A second subwoofer, one would do well, but the volume of room and the volume of space in the room just really warrants, two drivers.
Well, plus the fact you're exactly right, that if you have two drivers, you have a lot more capability of minimizing the room modes by judicious placement. Now, your subs are also in wall, I think, or you've mounted them in the wall?
They're not. The ones down here, they're freestanding in the room. They are in the corners by each screen, and they are in the corners upstairs. I think the ones you're referring to, Scott, when we were discussing stuff earlier upstairs, I have Velodyne in-wall subwoofers upstairs in the Great Room Theater. There's, we use triads upstairs also in that room, and Velodyne in-walls in that one. So I think that's where the confusion came in. But these are tried and true standing Velodyne digital drive 15s.
Mm-hmm. So 15-inch drivers, yep. Self-powered, I assume, right?
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Okay, you mentioned AVS Forum has a whole section on home theater PCs, and they have whole sections on all kinds of stuff, displays and audio systems and home theater PCs and bunches of stuff, literally hundreds of thousands of posts, many thousands of threads on all different kinds of issues. Now, what I wanted to start with you after we took a look in your home theater, which is fabulous, by the way. You must really never leave. is what led you to start AVS Forum, and how long ago was that?
Oh, boy, this goes back. AVS Forum, I was always an enthusiast way back when and can never not remember. I was actually a video film editor for Fox. I was an on-air master control operator, did video editing for Fox, and left there to do computers, believe it or not, even though I had a degree in broadcast. And from there, I always had the passion of audio video. And my wife likes to tell the story when we first moved into our first apartment after we got married. I had a 52-inch Sony XBR rear projection TV with only enough room in the living room for the couch. That's all you really need, right? And so here we have, I got the couch and I got the television. And that led me to a good friend of mine, Alan Gouger, at AV Science in Rochester, New York, when he was running that. And we became good friends. And in 1995, I started working with Alan as personally and on both personal level and then as a business relationship. And then I was programming back then when it was all text in the days. So I was doing some programming. And then in 1999, internet started to develop more. And I saw the digital age coming. Back then, before that, it was all CRTs. And I went through that phase and went along, right with Alan with that phase too. And saw the digital age coming, and in 1999, avsforum.com was born, and basically it grew from there. And I'm proud to say at this point, we're at 4.5 million unique visitors a month, which is quite outstanding.
It is quite outstanding. And I must say up front here that I am now newly associated with AVS Forum as the editor of the editorial content. So I'm very proud to be, because AVS Forum has, as I said, been around a long time, and certainly the largest AV home theater community on the web. And I do know that now AVS Forum is adding content other than the forums themselves, which are still the primary focus of the site. But we're now starting to put more content on the site, dedicated content to help people with their AV issues and to get the most out of their systems and to choose the best products and so on and so forth. So I'm very proud to be now associated with it as well.
Yeah, it was great to get you on board. We ran into each other at one of the trade shows and found out that you were, you know, looking to do some other things, and was happy to be able to get you on board, you know, with AVS. And we look forward to welcoming you to the team. Obviously, we already have welcomed you, but we look forward to some content creation. And you already started off with your first server piece that you did. And, you know, part one, that was.
Part two is coming up.
Yeah. Part two.
Media servers is a big, big subject. And I even limited myself to not home theater PCs because, as you said, there's already a big thread, bunches of threads, a whole section on home theater PCs, media center PCs. And I was originally approached to do an article about dedicated media servers, which on the video side include some expensive ones from Kaleidoscape and Mosaics. And on the audio side, they can get expensive too, but they're not as much. Things like the Meridian, what used to be called the Sulus system. Did you know they changed their name?
I had no idea.
It's no longer called Sulus. It's called the Meridian Digital System or something like that. Cassatunes, Autonomic, a couple others. So, you know, it was an interesting subject. And even by limiting myself to that, I couldn't get it all in one article, so part one's up there now. Part two will be coming along pretty soon. I'm also planning to run some polls, as you and I have talked about. I really would like to get the membership's ideas or preferences, you know, their picks for in various categories. Like, for example, one that I'm going to post here at some point pretty soon. Which do you prefer for your surround speakers, bipoles or dipoles or direct radiators?
Yeah, that'll definitely be a hot topic on AVS for you because people go back and forth on that all the time.
Yeah. And, what's your opinion on it?
Well, I use direct radiating in my particular theater because I can I'm able to put the speakers on the left and right side for the surrounds on each of the rows, and then also have the rears. And direct radiating works very well for me. I did have I've used a lot of different speakers in my time, as you can imagine. Sure. Oh, yeah. Right down to the magnaplaners and the magnapans, and those are just phenomenal speakers if you have a good enough sub, obviously, to support the low end of those, but you know, there's back and forth all the time, and I think you're gonna find that to be a great subject on AVS Forum once you put it up there.
Right. Well, there are many. One thing I found interesting, the first poll I put up regarded the Oscars, which are coming up later this month. At the end of the month, we're going to have the Oscars, and I asked, you know, which nominee for Best Picture did you think would you like to win? And the most common response was, I didn't see any of them.
That's right. Because you got to remember your audience in this case. You're talking AVS Forum, you know, and these guys are dedicated to their rooms and their theaters. And then I wasn't surprised by that result at all. Actually, it's exactly what AVS Forum is about, is self-entertainment. Well, wait a minute. That came off wrong.
Yeah, let's try that again.
Yeah. It, you know, AVS Forum is about, you know, bringing the cinema experience home for the most part,
or
with the gear that you have. And so I wasn't surprised by that whatsoever, that people aren't visiting the theaters. I kind of feel bad at that point because I myself do go to the theater when it's blockbusters or something that indicates me, because you can't get away from that giant screen and the interaction of some of these movies with the audience, which just makes it that much better.
See, I agree with you. I certainly love my home theater and I watch movies in there and stuff, but I also like going out to the movies, and I especially like going out, as you pointed out, to the new, really hot titles that might have some technological angle to them as well. For example, The Hobbit at high frame rate. You're not going to see that at home ever, at least not, you know, this year. Probably not, you know, and we'll talk about this a little later. I want to get your hit on, you know, where the whole home theater industry is going. And one possible place it could go, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, is delivering high frame rate into the home, either on disk or by streaming or some other method. And the other thing that I really like going out to the theater for is to hear Dolby Atmos, which is this new audio format which surrounds you with speakers around the sides, but also overhead, and directs sound-producing objects anywhere within that hemispherical sound space. And that's, you're not going to see that in the home anytime soon either. So those are two things that I like to go out to the movies for. But I heard one guy commented on that poll was, you know, oh, the presentation is generally not very good. There's some compromises and problems. And, you know, patrons are rude and they're on their cell phones or texting or whatever. And I can't disagree.
No, not at all.
You know, so. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just saying not at all. It's that's the regular movie going experience these days. You know, you got to contend with the people. But you hit the right movie, like the Star Trek movies or something like that, or you know, any of those where you it's better to experience it with the crowd. And not that it's not good in your home either. Don't get me wrong. But it's the crowd experience that goes along with that type of movie that makes it a little bit more special at times.
Right. Exactly. And when I agree with you also that when you're in a crowd and experiencing a movie, there is an energy that occurs. Everyone is in a shared experience, and it's worth something to me. So
I go on
Tuesdays to my local AMC, which has nothing but digital presentation. It does have a Dolby Atmos theater and an IMAX theater. And Tuesday nights are a discount night. So,
well, that works out all the way around then.
Exactly. So how has AVS Forum evolved over the years? You started it in 1999. So that is, 14 years ago. How has it evolved over time?
Well, the membership certainly has changed over time. It used to be a more of a niche group because, you know, it was harder. It's going to sound weird, but back in the days, most people were, you know, CRT driven and they were very expensive. So it was more of a niche product to have a dedicated room, and you really had to do something special to make it all work out. With the advent of 2002 of the digital age hitting, things just very quickly exploded. So in that particular case, you start getting your rear projection DLPs, you get your front projecting DLPs, and so on and so forth. And as that kept continuing to escalate, that, of course, starts to drive price down as more and more competition comes into the market. As price drives down, you start to get more and more people who are coming into the site now looking for that information that they need to help set up their home. And you have a whole different clientele at that point. So over years, it's been the membership and the technology pushing that, if you will, that has changed the face of AVS Forum for good or for bad. It all depends on how you look at it or what your use of the site is. But that's basically, you know, how I kind of seen it progress over the years. We now have, you know, more and more people that home theater in a box, you know, is all too easy. You know, everything is just cheap and easy to get. So you get people from all walks of life, if you will, on the site, which makes it for fun and exciting times.
Well, certainly one of the things I intend to do, and I think, tell me if I'm right or wrong, but one of the trends in AVS, certainly it's always been for enthusiasts and what we might call geeks. But what I'd like to do is to try and make sure that those who aren't hardcore at this, shall we say, would still feel welcome to come in and look around and ask questions. You know, my philosophy is there's no such thing as a stupid question. There's only information you don't have. And I'm very willing to share any information I do have in a non-judgmental, non-threatening way. And I do hope to do more and more of that to allow or to invite, I should say, more casual users to come in and look around and find out why we are so passionate about this hobby.
Well, and I commend you for doing that. Unfortunately, as in the real world, you don't have people that are so willing to do that all the time. And in a community environment where you have that many people, it's not, you know, I'd like to say it's all friendly all the time. Unfortunately, it's not. You get the people who are just, you know, they don't want to take the time to answer the question. So they'll say, use the search or something like that and blow up at a new user, which doesn't help anybody.
No.
unfortunately. But that's the scope. I mean, that's one of the ways AVS has changed over the years. Like I mentioned, with more and more people, you got more and more people that can unfortunately rub heads, if you will. And that can become problematic at times, but we have a good moderator staff that keeps up on those things as much as possible. And we do what we can to, you know, kind of curtail that. But AVS has always been about the member. We always, you know, it's about pushing technology, pushing the evolving trends and stuff to its limits, if you will. Just like, you know, with HD DVD and Blu-ray, when the wars were going on, it was fought on AVS Forum. And we never took sides as a company. With the members, of course, took great sides back and forth. But it was quite amazing. And we haven't had an experience like that since. And now, you know, then you start getting into 3D and things like that. And it's the members that really drive a site like that. Obviously, it's a community site. Without the members, who I take great pride in having on our site, it's not what it is. I mean, the manufacturers are great. They're there too. They help out when they can. But it's really the members helping members. And that was our motto for the longest time.
Yeah.
Members helping members.
Right. Which is a great motto and a great philosophy and a great approach to the whole idea. And I look forward to contributing to that.
I see a question there. I'm sorry. I got the chat room up too.
Oh, you got the chat room up too. Okay, sure. Go ahead. Yeah. I was gonna point a question at you, but if you see one you would like to answer, go for it.
Yeah, David. How does he control his devices? That's a funny question because everybody says, you know, oh, for a system like that, you have to have a whole control system and what have you. No, I use a Harmony remote. Yes, I kid you not. This is a Harmony one that runs this theater. And it's quite easy to use, and it does everything I need it to do. In fact, the other theaters, and we have another theater upstairs in our bedroom, and they all run Harmony. I don't have any Crestron or anything like that. Not that they're not good products. They are. But for my needs,
they're expensive.
Well, they are. They are. But for my needs, this works perfect. And
you and I both. I use the Harmony one in my theater as well. Exactly the same model.
Great. And understand, I'm also, as you say, the geek. And my home, over the years that we've owned this house, I've outfitted it with Z-Wave also. So there's 96 zones of Z-Wave, 96 controllers. So the whole house is now automated. And I do all this work myself because I just love doing this tech stuff. And
tell us what Z-Wave is, anybody who might not be familiar with that.
Z-Wave is a protocol, a wireless protocol where you have a control unit that can talk to things like light switches, relays, thermostats, door locks, what have you. And it's a protocol that acts wirelessly in the air to communicate. So I can say, dim the lights 50% and talk to this particular node and the lights will come down 50% and what have you. And then you use a home automation system like HomeSeer to tie it all together and run macros and do different things based on time of day, if you're walking into a room and what have you. You noticed when I went in the back of the equipment room, the lights automatically turned on. That was actually Z-Wave doing that with a sensor, and then it automatically turned the lights off. And I know they have things you can do in your home that doesn't require Z-Wave to do all that. But in my particular case, the whole house is automated.
Wow, that is very cool. I was going to get to a different question here, which was Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, given a tight budget and creating a system over time, which is more important to emphasize, the audio or the video?
That's personal preference.
all right.
It really is. It's a hard call because a lot of people, it depends on what you're going to use your room for, or if you're going to just use it in a regular great room setting, you know, your family room or what have you. I would emphasize video because you can always add audio and what have you. So if you're going to spend the money, I would start out with some video, and you probably want to look, if you really want to maximize your money, believe it or not, look for used products. There's a lot of used products out there that are phenomenal products that people like us on AVS Forum, we're known as the early adopters, always change out and upgrade gear or what have you. And so there's a lot of good deals out there. So, you know, I look at the video end of things and then I go into the audio end of things. But, you know, it becomes on a personal preference. If you listen to a lot of music, then you're going to want to go audio. But if you're really watching movies or television, then put your time and energy into a video system. And then from there, go to audio, which there's a lot of things coming down the pipe for audio, which I want to get to at some point, Scott.
Yes, we will. We will very shortly here, in fact. The only point I would make in that regard is I agree with you. It's a matter of personal preference. And you can spend just as much as you want on either or both of those sides of the equation. I mean, you can get speakers that are hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can blow tons of money on amps, preamp processors. On the video side, you can, you know, projectors can be well over six figures.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, or you could get one of these new 110-inch 4K displays that we saw at CES when they become available for $300,000 was the price I heard for one of those. Yeah. The Panasonic 152-inch plasma, which is a 4K as well, is $500,000.
$500,000. And then you can get one that comes up out of the ground if you want and put it outside.
Yeah, exactly.
I kid you not. There's one that actually comes up out of the ground, expands out, and gives you your display. And then when you're done, it folds back up and retracts into the ground.
Is that from Beovision or Bang & Olufsen? I forget who that's from.
It's not. I don't think it's from Bang & Olufsen, but they'd be the ones that would really want to sell it, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too.
But it was incredibly expensive. It was $200,000+, but it was really, really cool.
But you don't have to spend that kind of money. I mean,
my
general rule is if you want to get a projector, let's talk about a front projection system, which is really sort of the quintessential home cinema, home theater experience, because it really mimics what you get in a commercial cinema, but at home without the sticky floors and the people talking on their cell phones. I say you need to spend at least about $2,000 to $3,000 on a projector minimum. You can certainly spend a lot more than that, but $2,000 to $3,000 will get you, you know, one of the new Epsons, which are really fine.
Oh, that is out of the box. The Epson 5020 is got to be, and I don't usually do stuff like this, and I apologize to other people out there, but the 5020, we just had one of those on the home theater cruise. They sent us one to use aboard, and out of the box, it was just a phenomenal little projector, and you can get those for under $3,000. And yeah. It was outstanding.
Yeah. So you get one of those, you get a screen, and you want to get a good screen. Have you ever tried Screen Goo, this paint that you paint on your wall for a screen? I never have.
I've never tried it, no, but I'll tell you that was developed off of ABS Forum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of products you know and love and heard about have actually been developed at one time. That's another claim to fame I love that, you know, people don't talk about, but ABS Forum has been, I mean, SVS subwoofers was all started as do-it-yourself, you know, people in their garage and what have you, do-it-yourself, and they became a business. You know, you got the green glue, you got the paint on the wall, and a lot of different products. It's quite amazing.
Wow, it is amazing. Anyway, I generally recommend getting a real screen, and you're going to spend $500 to $2,000, depending on the make and model and size. I don't recommend getting a home theater in a box generally. Have you found any that are any good? I haven't.
No, I mean, they serve their purpose. I mean, home theater box in a box, you know, they're great marketing. They're great, easy. Everything comes together and it's easily laid out for a person to use. Is it a good starting point? Absolutely. Is it something to grow with? No, you're not really. But it does serve a purpose. You got people... kids going to college or what have you, if you will, and they need something for their dorm room, that works out very well because everything's self-contained. But as far as a general for the home, it's not something I personally would look to.
I wouldn't either. So the least expensive I think you can get into a reasonably good audio system is something on the order of a midline Onkyo or Denon receiver in the $500-$700 range.
Yep.
And the Pioneer speakers designed by Andrew Jones, which I have heard, and those are phenomenal. You can get a 5.1 system for like $500. And they're quite remarkable. So I'd say minimum you're talking about for a decent, really nice home theater system that you'll be proud of and happy to own and happy to use. You're talking with the screen and the projector $4,000 to $5,000 and another $1,000 or so for the receiver and speakers, $100 to $200 for a Blu-ray player. So you're in the, you know, the $5,000 to $6,000 range.
You can get into a decent system for sure for $5,000. I mean,
exactly.
Like I said, I would again look for used look at the used market. Just because there's always people always upgrading gear. And it's just a great way to go. I mean, it really is. I don't know any other way to say it, but if you're looking to get into this and get into front projection, you know, don't try to buy a screen for the most part, because shipping one of those, if you don't ship it properly, you're going to destroy the screen anyways.
Don't get a used screen is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, because I've heard too many horror stories of that. You know, people folded the screen or what have you.
Exactly, right.
Since they're quite large for the most part, they're harder to ship. And so I'd say look to a screen from a, you know, like Stewart or Daylight or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And AVS Forum, we should say, does have a classified section for members who are selling their gear, right?
It does, very much so. And it's very active. Very active.
Okay, very good. Let's see here. Beatmaster asks, what is your definition of a, quote, good movie? I think that's pretty subjective, too.
That is very subjective. Right now, when I started this clip, if anybody had seen it, if anybody knows what that was, let me know. I'm kind of curious if they remembered what it was. But I like sci-fi. I like action and sci-fi. So that's where I fall. One of the least used things inside of a home theater or a well-done room or what have you, and I believe it's greatly overlooked and it should not be, is concerts. I believe there are so many great concerts on Blu-ray that if you're not looking at some of these things, you should be, because they are not only great demo pieces for audio, but they're just sonically, some of them are just phenomenal. Sting Live in Berlin is my personal favorite for Fidelity. It's an amazing piece. Not only is the video outstanding itself in regards to how it was shot and the direction, but the audio mix it's got to be one of the best pieces I've ever heard. And if you really haven't exposed yourself to using your theater or your room for concerts, please do. It opens up a whole new reason to make room or to have a large screen, if you will.
Great, great. Well, before we go on, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Netflix. Now, we're talking about home theaters and Blu-ray and everything else, but certainly one of the newer and becoming more and more important sources for content is online streaming. And Netflix is really at the forefront of that, with thousands of episodes, TV episodes and movies available on demand right from any device that you might have with a chip in it, basically, as Leo likes to say, anything with a chip in it. That would include TVs and Blu-ray players, computers, of course, and gaming consoles, dedicated boxes. Just about anything you have in your home theater room is going to probably have a Netflix app on it, and that is going to give you access to all the streaming content on Netflix for one low monthly rate. Now, you can try it for 30 days. Those few of you who don't have it yet, haven't tried it yet, please do. We encourage you to do so to see if it will work for you. As yet another source of quality entertainment in your home theater room. All you have to do is go to netflix.com/twit and sign up for a 30-day free trial. And I do hope you do. I myself use it all the time for content that I can't find on Blu-ray and certainly not on broadcast, but is available there on Netflix. I particularly like the TED Talks. I watch a lot of that on Netflix, and it's very interesting. Anyway, for your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Okay, so Web6430 has a good question. Please ask what remote you will trade in now that Logitech is selling its Harmony division. I don't know about you, but they're going to pry that Harmony out of my cold, dead fingers.
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, they'll sell the division, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I mean, in regards to go away, that is. I think it's too great of a product, and their database collection of IR codes and everything is just too great to give up. I mean, you got all the legacy products in there, and it's still a wonderful product. And unfortunately, their prices did drop off in regards to how many they were selling, you know, and it was just, they had to do something. And unfortunately, it was the Harmony that's taken the hit. But I don't know where the sales went to, quite literally, because I don't know of any other really solid solution, in my humble opinion.
Well, what I think happened was it was the rise of remote control apps for smartphones and tablets.
Yes. Good point. Very good point.
I think that's what it did. Now, like I hate that. I hate touchscreen remotes because you have to look at them to find the button you want to push.
There's no tactile. Back.
There's no tactile feedback, and they're very bright. And so they change the dark adaptation of your eyes in your theater.
I agree.
So for those two reasons alone, I really despise them, and I would never use them. I want physical buttons, which the Harmony One has, and some other remotes do too. A lot of people ask me about URC, Universal Remote Control, which is another universal remote company. And yep. Installers love them because you can program them in a very flexible manner. They're more powerful in terms of being more flexible than the Harmonies. But to program them is a pain in the butt. So
yep. And that's it requires somebody to do it for you also, don't forget.
Yeah. In many cases it does, unless you're a super geek and can deal with, you know, programming macros and doing all that stuff. The Harmony does it all for you. So it's much better.
It has made it, the Harmony made it so nice for people. That's for sure.
F-Loop in the chat room is asking a good question. Before we get to the last topic of conversation, is the recent obsession with 4K a misdirected desire for improvement in other parameters of display performance and content quality?
Wow, that's loaded. I don't know how to answer that one, unfortunately. I always like to see the envelope pushed, that's for sure. And 4K is definitely pushing the envelope. Unfortunately, to really enjoy and see the benefits of 4K, you need a large screen. I mean, you need a large screen to utilize that pixel structure, or you really, you know, don't gain much for that expense at this point. And then you, of course, got the whole other argument of content. Well, if you build it, they'll come. And that's basically what's happening in this case. The content will surely come at some point. But the price point, of course, of 4K projectors and flat panels, of course, will greatly have to come down. And for the mass market, for the mass consumer, I don't see, you know, it being a big attraction to them at this point, because there are so many other panels that, I mean, most households are 55 to 60 inch panels, and you're really not going to get the benefit of a 4K device on that size of a panel.
Yeah, I have to agree for the most part. Okay, so what is your take on the home theater industry today, and where do you see it going in the next few years? What can we expect?
Well, good question. That's come up a few times, and we've had conversations like aboard the last home theater cruise, which just happened last November. We had a panel of people up there, and we were discussing that. And one of the big things I believe is going to be happening in the industry is two things. There's actually two things I'm excited about. I shouldn't say excited about one of them, but one of them, first off, to open up a home market to people who really can't get surround sound, for example, and for ease of installation, wireless speakers. Mm. And there's an association called WISA, W-I-S-A, who is basically championing a protocol where standards and testings can be done. So you can have a Yamaha product and a Samsung product or what have you, and you can have Triad speakers with a built-in receiver, and you can have a Yamaha receiver and or AVR, and it will just work. It'll just link, kind of like Wi-Fi, but for the wireless world. And I believe that opens up a whole new area, condos, apartments, college dorm rooms, things like that, where anywhere you have an electrical outlet, you can plug in a speaker and link it up and grow your speaker system that way using wireless. And people are going to say, wait a minute, that sounds terrible. I'll tell you that aboard the cruise, when we started off our demonstration, we purposely went with an audio video track. And at the end, I pointed out to the audience participants, I said, take a look around at the speakers that you're listening to. You see the wires running to them. You'll notice that those are not speaker wires. Those are power wires. And they were kind of shocked because they were getting fidelity out of an audio system that's running at 5.8 gigahertz on 24 channels.
This is something that people complain about that when I talk about wireless is, oh, the quality's not so good. And someone in the chat room here, James Spawn, is saying, my wireless speakers pop too much.
Yeah, it's because what's the age? How old are they? And it's definitely not a system that was probably built, you know, I don't know what you have. I'm just going to say you got company A's product and they're putting out a wireless system, and depends on the frequency they're using or how they're doing it and what have you. But that's where WISA comes in. We're setting standards with the association, and companies are getting on board. So basically, the protocols will work, and they'll work properly from product to product. And from there, what happens is you open up a whole new realm of places you can go with it. I mean, outdoor auditoriums, outdoor theaters, I mean, things like that where it's hard to run wires. And in a 5.8 gigahertz spectrum, there's a lot of room because it's vastly unused compared to the 2.4 spectrum. You can get a digital transmission, and it's flawless. Like I said, the people in the audience did not know there was no speaker wires running to it. I mean, it's just great. And when you have company who's trying to do the protocols, and then you get other companies like Pioneer and Sharp and Panasonic and what have you all signing on saying, yeah, we'll support this. That's going to shake up the industry, and that's going to move things in the right direction.
It reminds me a bit of Sonos, which uses Wi-Fi, not wireless audio, but Wi-Fi. Basically, it converts the audio into network packets and sends them on, and then they get decoded at the other end. Have you had a chance to sort of compare or contrast the performance of Wi-Fi versus the WISA standard?
First off, it's not really anything to that extent. What they're using in Sonos is a mesh network, basically. It's a 2.4 gigahertz mesh network.
You're right.
It's just a data network, if you will. And all they're doing is they're sending the data across, just like if you hardwire or run wirelessly streaming from your house. Same idea. In what they're doing with WISA, they are setting the protocols and the standards. So company A will work with company B, just like you can go anywhere with your computer, walk into a Starbucks, a McDonald's, your house, it will just work for the most part. And that's exciting to me. I like to see advancements like that. And if people get behind it, I mean, anybody with kids or dorm rooms or who has a condo or an apartment out there and you have associations that don't allow you to run wires through the walls or what have you, now you got an outlet. Before, you would use a sound bar or something like that. That'd be a sound projector like the Yamahas started out with, and then everybody else caught on to that. But now you're going to be able to do all this wirelessly, and you can start with a sound bar. Believe it or not, they got sound bars that have the chips built in, and then you want to add left and right speakers to that. It'll just link, and the sound bar becomes the center. You add two more, it automatically links. Boom, now you got surround sound, and you got a whole 5.1 system wirelessly.
Now, is this standard already done, or are they still working on it?
Oh, they're still it's currently developing. All the standards are done. They're actually Summit Semiconductors are actually making the chips and what have you. There are speaker systems out there that are currently utilizing it. And you can actually find some online and buy them. You can actually buy a 5.1 and a 7.1 wireless system right now. And I know you're going to ask me next who's doing that. Aperion Audio. They were nice enough and gracious enough to send us the system to use on board the cruise. And Aperion Audio. So if you go to Aperion Audio, you'll be able to find them there. And there's actually, like I said, a 5.1 and a 7.1 wireless system that you won't believe is wireless.
They make fabulous speakers too, just regular wired speakers. So I can imagine that they would go for quality in this case.
And understand that now you get some people out there to go, oh, it's not truly wireless because you got to plug it into the wall. That's true.
That's
true.
We're
talking speaker wires, okay? More people have outlets around their house than they do ways to run speaker wires. So I don't know, you know, in my room, I can easily put in two channels in my rear, or in my bedroom, put two channels in because I know there's going to be an outlet on the back wall or two outlets on the back wall, and I don't have to run speaker wires. So
well, I get a ton of emails from people saying, you know, I can't run wires from the front of the room to the back of the room. Either it's because they've got kids or whatever, they can't run them through the walls, or it's the wife acceptance factor. But this sounds like it's going to be a great solution for that. And as a matter of fact, I should plug that I'm having one of the technical guys from WISA as a guest on this show later in the month, which you helped set up for me. So I thank you for that.
Alan's going to be on this show.
Alan Ruberg, right.
Yeah, so if you guys out there listening are more curious about this system, definitely watch for that show to come up. Alan is phenomenal, and he's a tech head. totally a tech head, and he will be able to explain the system left and right a lot more than I can. I'm just totally behind the movement, and I'll support the movement because I believe it's right for home theater, and it's right to push, you know, more theaters into homes that they can't reach currently because of the wiring situation. But right. Any case.
Well, you said there were two points you wanted to make, and wireless was one. What was the other? The second
one is content delivery. More and more, it's not like when we were growing up, Scott, where, you know, we went through the television broadcast. We went through VHS, Betamax. We went through all the renditions of different formats, Laserdisc and what have you. And as quality kept increasing, you know, we didn't have the internet and we didn't have all that wireless data and what have you that's available everywhere now. What we're seeing more and more with the generation coming up is they're watching television on their telephones. And the problem being is they don't care as much about the quality. I believe in the future, everything's going to be going content streaming for the most part. I mean, Netflix, for example, which you just mentioned, who's your sponsor, they're taking a huge gamble with House of Cards. And that
right,
is a,
which I haven't seen yet, but I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to it very much. I think it's going to be great.
Right. And there's a plus side and the down upside of that is one, you can get your content anywhere, anytime, which is great as long as you have service and as long as you have good enough service. So those are the criteria that you're going to run into. But I do believe in this fast moving world, I believe that's where a lot of this is going to be going in the future is content delivery and how you're going to be receiving it. People, don't get me wrong, I still think people are going to want that disc in their hand. They're going to want that media. But as this generation comes up, you know, along the lines, they just want instant access. They want it now. And that's basically the way it's going.
And we've certainly seen that in terms of audio, where people are flocking towards MP3, which is a low quality, highly compressed, lossy compressed audio stream or file. Because it's easier to download and so on, as opposed to, you remember when MP3 was just coming up, it was at the same time as the battle between SACD and DVD audio, which were the next generation, higher quality disc formats than CD. Both of those formats went nowhere, essentially.
They went nowhere.
I mean, SACD is still around a little bit, but.
And why do they go nowhere, Scott? Because now you can get it instantly. It destroyed it. Once you can start getting it online and downloading it, people weren't so much looking at the quality content as they were about how they can get it and just get it. And that's unfortunately, I think that's the way it's going to go in the future. Now, people are like, well, 4K, how are you going to do that? Well,
exactly.
You can take 4K and you can say, okay, I'm going to want to watch that movie. And it might take you, depending on the link that you have, a while to download it. But they'll do something with hard drive protection or encryption or what have you. And you'll be downloading that content or you'll go out somewhere, run a drive or they'll have discs, I think. But I'm just thinking content streaming in the future is really where the content's going to come from. They're broadcasting 4K overseas.
They are. I know that at CES, the Korean broadcast company, Korean Broadcast System, KBS, was showing a demonstration of 4K broadcasting, terrestrial broadcasting. Basically, they had their transmitter behind the wall and they had the receiver in front of the wall at LG. And they were showing a 4K. It's 2160p at 60 hertz, 60 frames per second broadcasting. They needed two antennas and two HDMI cables going to the TV. But there it was, and it looked great, I thought.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think people are going to want the quality. Don't get me wrong. They're going to want it. But don't forget, it's not like the olden days. Everything is moving exponentially faster than it used to. So what used to take long to develop in the past takes very short amount of time to develop right now, including compression algorithms. So you'll be able to compress huge amounts of data and still be able to get that quality by uncompressing it at the other end. And that's changing. I mean, look at the different codecs that are out there nowadays. And it's just going to get better over time, obviously. And it's moving exponentially. So that's why I think that's the way it's going to go in the future, because people are going to develop these codecs, and they're going to get that compression that they need without killing the bandwidth pipe. And that's actually, you know, I'm kind of nervous about that, too, because you have infinite amount of space and airwaves and you have an infinite amount of space going across copper. And most of the U.S. is wired by copper. So.
Right. Now, there, to get back to the point of AVS members, though, Caffeine-Free Dave in the chat room is making a point that I think a lot of AVS members would be making, which is, I don't want streaming content. I want the disc. Because I suspect Caffeine-Free Dave is saying, because the quality is there. And despite the fact of what you just said, that the codecs are getting better and you're going to be able to compress more and still have a reasonable quality, it's still not going to be the same as a Blu-ray or whatever physical media might be developed for 4K. And the AVS forum members, I suspect, by and large, are going to prefer that simply because it's higher quality.
I don't know, Scott. I mean, you say that, and you think that it would be true. No, you think it would be true, but let's face it. If you can get the same quality downloaded as you can on a Blu-ray right now, I mean, wouldn't you do it? I mean, wouldn't you subscribe to a service? I mean, look at Vudu, for example. Phenomenal service. No, it's not all the way up there, but it will be. I mean,
and it's as close as you can get now with streaming with HDX.
That's right. Exactly. So as they develop more and more things, better and better compression, you're going to run into that. And will they do other things? Sure, they will. But even Redbox is moving to a streaming service with Verizon and their partnership with them. So they even see that the future is streaming. There are so many streaming services out there right now. It's amazing. Netflix, of course, is the biggest, and they started it all. And they're doing some innovative things. They took some of their hits and their lumps along the way. But now you have other companies like, you know, the Redbox, as mentioned, coming up and along. And yeah, it's older stuff. But then again, you got your services for instant demand for on satellite dish and cable, you know, for video on demand and all that. But that's part of that whole thing of on-demand and streaming. Technically, that's streaming. You sit there with your cable box and say, I want to watch this movie now. It's coming down to you. And you can get 1080p content. I mean, I'm waiting for the lossless audio to come down at some point.
Yeah, well, that is one other step. Certainly, you saw, at CES, Sony was talking about their means of content distribution was exactly what you're talking about, which is for 4K in particular, downloading 4K into a big old hard drive that you have at your house and distributing it that way. And I tend to think I agree with you that that's probably the way it's going to go. Certainly more that will happen before Blu-ray Disc Association gets it together to do a 4K disc format, which Blu-ray can't really do now. I mean, it can sort of. They've got a dual layer. You can get up to 100 gigabytes, and if you on a disc, BDXL people talk about. Well, you can get more than 50 gigabytes rather. Sorry, on a Blu-ray, and 100 gigabytes or 128 gigabytes on a BDXL, but that's only a rewritable or a write once format. It's not a commercial product that you know you can stamp out like a Blu-ray. So they have to come up with a new format for a disc format for 4K. So all of that is by means of saying I agree with you that getting content from online is probably the wave of the future. I agree.
Yeah, and that's you know, like as I mentioned, as more and more things change down the line with data and compression, that's where it's going to be developed. I mean, Ultraviolet was, you know, the stepping stone for the theaters, excuse me, not the theaters, the studios to try to circumvent and get on that download bandwagon. And so now you buy a disc and it comes with a digital copy and you can play that anywhere, anytime. So, right. You know, even they are looking at that direction. And more as as bandwidth develops and what have you, you're gonna have more of that. Now, the downside of that is if you lose connection, you lose connectivity, you lose your services, you're going to want that disc. So
Right. Exactly. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I did want you to tell us a little bit about the home theater cruise. You mentioned it, and it is something else that you do. It's related to AVS Forum. But I want to make sure everybody gets a sense to know what it's about. How long have you been doing it? What is it? How can I sign up?
Well, not something I wanted to talk about. The home theater cruise was started by my wife and I back in 2002, and we've had some great years doing it. And I partnered with Gary Reber in 2003 to help produce some of the the conferences we have on board, and we've had cruises of 500 people on board at a time, and they were just outstanding. And since 2008 and the economy hit and everything, it just hasn't been what it used to be. It's still a small knit group, 100 or so people get together. We used to do it about once a year. And it's it's we've had 10 cruises, and we've had everybody from we've had Class A audio engineers on board. In fact, at one cruise we had the who's who list of the A list of audio engineers, 26 Grammy awards between them, including Phil Ramone. Phil Ramone, who got a Grammy for producing the Grammys, you know, was on board with us. And so we've done some great things over the time on the event. One of the other things that I'm really proud of is over time, we've raised a lot of money in different ways, mostly through home theater auctions for charities, the Elf Foundation, who builds home theaters and children's hospitals. And then also our newest one that we look to is Segs for Vets, for veterans that come home who have been amputees or what have you. We buy Segways and train them on how to use Segways so they can stand up and be tall again as they go around with their family, you know, walking their dog, going out with their kids or what have you. It's a whole mental thing as far as not just the mechanical of getting around, but the idea that you're standing up looking somebody eye to eye again versus sitting in a wheelchair or what have you. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to do things like that for our veterans returning.
I actually know of that charity myself, and it is a very worthy cause, as is the Elf Foundation, which, as you say, builds home theaters into children's hospitals for people, kids with really serious medical conditions who can escape for a couple hours into a movie, which is, after all, what we're all looking for, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I got to say, I'm very proud. My wife and I have, over the all these years of doing the cruises and an AVS Forum, we've done over $600,000 in donations to one charity or another.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. Through the generosity of the members of the site and the people who are on the cruise, and of course the manufacturers that help support through products and what have you. So, you know, Epson and Samsung and companies like that.
Finally, I hope you don't mind this, but I wanted to just let people know that you and your wife actually spend a lot of time on the road, and you have a website that basically documents all of your travels around the country. Do you want to say something about that?
Sure. That's always fun. One of the things that we do with it also is we do meet and greets and we meet people around the country. My wife and I started traveling in 2008 in a motor coach. We have a 43-foot Tourmaster, and it's completely outfitted. We ripped out everything in it in regards to the audio video portions that came with it. This coach came all composite, wired for composite video. So we pulled it out and rewired it. It's all HDMI with a 4x4 matrix switch. There's actually four flat panel TVs, a front projector, and an outside projector that we take outside, and we put a screen up on the side of the motor coach, and people walk over from different campsites and what have you, and we do movies under the stars. And it's just fun.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I got this idea a long time ago. I'm like, you know, what are we doing sitting home? You know, we shouldn't just – I work online. I reach out to these people, you know, like you do here. I work online, and what are we doing sitting home? So we bought this motor coach, and we travel the country. And the website for those listening in or in the chat room is – you can follow along with our travels – is outsideourbubble.com. So outside, R-O-U-R, bubble, because it's all dedicated to getting out and doing something different. Trying to experience new things, be it people, be it food, be it adventures like skydiving or bungee jumping or hot air ballooning. It's getting outside and trying to live life and get outside of this bubble that everybody seems to be in from the day-to-day activities. And I'm lucky enough and I'm blessed enough through the great site that we've developed and the members that I can work on the road. So we do. So outsideourbubble.com. My newest adventure is flying a drone. Yeah, I said the bad word, drone.
Uh-oh. You mean a military drone?
No, I fly. It's a quadcopter. Believe it or not, military technology is coming home. And I fly a quadcopter. I can go up to 3/4 of a mile away. I wear video goggles, and I get all the telemetry, and we fly the drone, and I shoot our adventures in high def and put them up on YouTube. And you get to see the world in a different perspective. When I'm flying, I'm literally flying as if I'm sitting on that little helicopter.
That's incredible. Yeah, and how do you hook up to the internet on the road?
On the road, we do two things. I have a HughesNet. I have a G74 satellite dish that we get somewhere. I push a button. If we're out in the middle, a lot of the national parks are so far out and are so vast that they don't allow cell phone towers out there. So you can't get service. And a lot of the parts of the country, believe it or not, when you get off the main highways and stuff, you may be in areas that don't have service. So we have a Hughes system that we push a button, a satellite dish comes up off the roof, finds the satellite that we're assigned to, locks on, and I get data that way. And then the other way is I get 4G through Verizon as I travel the country. I try to use the 4G as much as I can because of the speeds, obviously, and before that it was 3G. But the HughesNet system allows me to have communication anywhere I am, including Canada or Mexico, or this year we're going to Alaska.
Wow, wow. Well, I encourage everyone to follow your travels. When is that going to be, and when are you heading to Alaska?
We're probably going to start our, if everything goes well, mind you, we're going to head out around June and start going across the country. We're in upstate New York. So we'll go cross country and then go up into Canada and then come back down for CEDIA, which is the CEDIA Expo this year is in Denver at the end of September. So we'll be there for that. And, but before that, we're hoping to head out before the end of the week here and go to Florida for a month or so. And I like getting out because right now we're up in Rochester and it's really cold out here. And I really am itching to get out of the house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, this has been just a great conversation. I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate it, Scott. And once again, glad to have you aboard on AVS Forum as one of our editors. And really appreciate your time and energy you put into the site now that you're with us and glad to have you. And thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. Thank you. Now, of course, you can read David's stuff at avsforum.com and also follow his travels at outsideourbubble.com. You can find me on AVS Forum, as we've been talking about, as its new editor. And I'm also on hometheaterhifi.com, answering reader and listener questions in a Q&A column there. You can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, my guest geeks are scheduled to be Carl Lang, a color scientist from a company called Lumita, and Tim Anderson of 3LCD. They're going to be talking about a new light output measurement that I first learned about at CES and provides an interesting insight into how projectors in particular, but flat panels as well, can be measured for their light output and how it provides some new information that we didn't really think about before. So I'm looking forward to talking about that, and I do hope you will join me. Until then, geek out.